granddaughters, bunch of cars.
Well, welcome back to Action RC, the podcast series taking you inside RC racing, both now and over its history. Today, it's now we're talking about. If you're a regular listener, you will know that I am very excited, ridiculously excited, about the 10th Off-Road Worlds coming up later this year. That race takes place in classic US indoor off-road conditions at Hobby Action Raceway. And over the weekend just gone, the team at Hobby Action hosted the official warm-up race for the event, the One-Up Challenge. We could not let this warm-up go by without taking a bit of a look at what's going on and the state of play as we head into the next few months. Fortunately for us, friend of the show, Andrew Salvaggi, was present at the event, both racing in the spec classes, but also helping out Team Associated. Andrew's Team Associated's Australian race team manager. He's been on the show before. Go and find that episode. But also has what I think is one of the finest analytical brains in the sport. So we've asked Andrew to cast an eye over the warm-up event, see what we have to look forward to over the next few months. Andrew, welcome back. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me back. I assumed that you'd run for the hills after the first podcast we did together, but it's an honour to be back on here. And thanks for the second chance.
I think officially the second time guest on the show, so it's good. It's good. How's the trip? I mean, it's long haul from Australia. We were just chatting. You're back and kind of getting over the jet lag and getting back to life here.
Yeah, definitely. Was there for a 10-day whirlwind tour. Land back in Australia on Wednesday, just gone, and straight back on the horse and to work an hour later after landing. So, speaking to the guys in the US, they obviously came over here for the World Championships in 2018 for Nitro. Yeah. And the trip to them seems like it's you're traveling to the moon. It's that far away. Honestly, for us, now we can fly direct out of the major cities here in Australia. Going over there, it's a 13.5-hour plane flight. I've sat in a car driving to the middle of nowhere for an RC event longer than that. So that's right.
It's not so bad.
It's not too bad. And, you don't have to drive and you get a meal and you can have a sleep. And,
away you go. And did you enjoy the trip? Are you glad to have made the effort to get over there for the One-Up Challenge?
Definitely enjoyed the trip. It was, obviously, you spoke about when we last caught up. I was there last year with Jared Mint season finale of INS at Hobby Action, and got the chance to go back there and see how they go about their business again. And they never disappoint. So it was a really great trip. Got to drive from LA to Chandler. So that was a fun 6-hour drive. So I think a lot of people have that to look forward to if they're flying into LA and then driving to Chandler for the world. So, really, really good holiday. I shouldn't call it a holiday. These racing events aren't holidays. You need a holiday after the racing event usually.
That's right. Yeah.
It was a really good event, and I'm glad to go over there to be able to see, one, the theme of how they're going to run the event. This was a proper dry run of the Worlds.
Okay.
And all the processes and systems they have in place, and then also to see how the track really evolves with a controlled tire. So for me, albeit not racing in the modified classes, was a really good opportunity to see how the track is going to evolve, how the setups of the cars evolve, and then also what driving style is required on that surface for those tires. It was a really great event. I had the opportunity to catch up with Jared Mint again. We were over there together last year, and he's over there at the moment on a 2.5-month whirlwind RC tour. Got the opportunity to catch up with him and check in and make sure he's doing right. And great event. And I wish I was still there.
If only you could stay between now and the Worlds. It's a great trip Jared's in the middle of, and g'day to Jared if you happen to be listening. We've been following along via social media and results, apps and things, with Jared's trip to the US, and looks like he's having a good time. So this really was the official warm-up for the Worlds and the One-Up Challenge, the name of the event, supported by One-Up Racing. So just give us a little bit of a sense of, there's a couple of things you mentioned there, tyres we'll come back to, but this really was a dry run. You mentioned that, so the facility sounds like it's kind of A grade, and the team that they've got together for the Worlds the event went smoothly the weekend, you know, in terms of systems and those sorts of things? They're all on top of it all.
Yeah, definitely. I think we were talking about it. I was talking with the owner of Hobby Action, Larry Tom. Mm. This is kind of one of the first worlds where it's going to be held in a facility that is a shop front as well. Mm. You know, previously, you say in 2019 at Huddy Arena, mm. you know, that was a place of business, but more so a private facility. Yeah. Whereas this is quite different. It's front and center in the middle of a shopping center. You know, quite a lot of foot traffic and customers that come through. So the vibe is very different. Yeah. It is a you know, first and foremost the business that supplies that area with everything hobby. And then also has a world class facility for racing, albeit in the background of their amazing hobby shop. Mm. The team there, because they are a public facing entity and business, their key kind of mantra and focus is customer service and professionalism. So everything they do, even trackside, is uses those mantras as well. So the event was well planned, well run. Every official had their role. The layout of the pits, the dry run of tire tech, and tech pre and post tech were really smooth and slick. Unlike other venues where, say, they're supported by clubs or organizations, this was all run by Hobby Action employees and also racers. So club racers who would be there on a Wednesday or Saturday night, they put their hand up and said, "We'd like to help you out, you know, check voltage, blow the track, or, you know, that type of stuff." So it was, the experience is slightly different to other worlds that I've been to where you have that customer service side. Mm. Normally it's very racer-centric, racer-focused, but this was very slick and polished.
Yeah, good. Well, it sounds like that if they, you know, keep that most of that team together and maybe add a couple more, that sounds like a really good basis for a fantastic Worlds in terms of the organisational side.
Definitely will be. Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, this was obviously the Hobby Action is the venue, but it is run by Roar and IFMA. Yeah, yeah. And the venue has some obligations to fulfill around facilities and things like organizing banquets and all of that type of stuff and the media coverage. But this was kind of a dry run without all of the Roar and IFMA officials there. So if it runs that well without, you know, that type of people power and the, you know, kind of the rulemakers being there, I'm really excited to see how it runs when they've got the full force of all the organizations there.
Fantastic. Let's talk about the track a little bit. And you know, obviously I know the track layout will change for the Worlds, and we can talk a little bit about that, but tell me a little bit about the track for this weekend in terms of, I guess I'm interested in the level of difficulty. There seem to be a couple of really tricky spots in the track layout itself, but also then, you know, the surface, and you already talked about, you know, paying attention to how the surface and the track itself evolved over the weekend. So tell me a little bit about the racetrack for the One Up Challenge, and what sorts of things did you notice that might be important for us come September?
Yeah, I think the first thing to note is that how they are preparing the track and the condition that they're wanting to achieve and maintain throughout the event. Mm. So this was not only just a run for the you know, kind of the track crew to what's the recipe for maintaining and continuing to have a consistent track, but also there was a conscious choice to run the warm up in a time where the weather will be almost comparable to to at the world. So obviously the Worlds will be in September. Yep. At the moment they're just exiting their, you know, their spring over there at the moment, and then we'll be in fall when we're back there. So temperatures around the same, humidity is around the same. So they were basically setting the tone of this is how it's going to be when it is going to come Worlds time. As far as kind of their maintenance and the type of surface that they were trying to achieve, they were running it fairly dry. Mm. For those that haven't seen or been there, it is a clay surface, but it's got quite a lot of granite and sand in there, so okay. It's quite abrasive.
Yeah, interesting.
And if you don't run it damp or wet, it grips up and becomes quite abrasive to the point where, you know, almost like a long wear, you know, high temperature outdoor tire would work.
Wow.
But yeah, so the track, as far as their maintenance wise, it was running it fairly dry. They were only using their misters. They weren't hand watering. So okay. They've got a full misting system there, like, how they had at other venues like OCRC.
Mm-hmm.
And so every 5 minutes after each race, they were blowing. So each marshal gets a blower and you walk the track and drop the blower off at the next marshal point. Mm-hmm. And then the misters would go off for anywhere from 15 to 20 seconds. So that was kind of the upkeep and the routine for the track. It, as I mentioned, it ran fairly dry towards the end, and it did start to break up in some sections, but the crew were patching those and fixing them every day. So I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at the video. That's probably not evident there, but, you know, there were some areas that broke up, especially after, say, a section like the whoops that we mentioned. So that was kind of the track condition and how they were maintaining it. I did speak to the team over there. They said that's the recipe that they'll be using over there for the Worlds.
Yep.
They're not proposing to change it unless they have something happen when they rebuild the track and the moisture levels aren't there and et cetera. But as far as layout goes, it was a very vanilla US style track. You know, the kind of hallmarks of a typical indoor track over in the US, and this kind of became evident when speaking to some of the UK guys and the European guys that came over for the warm-up, is that, you know, they build corners with a jump into another corner. You know, every section of track from one corner to the next has something in there. There's no flat section of track besides the straight. Everything's got a on camber, off camber, jump. So that's kind of the style of track building, kind of feel like supercross, motocross, for US style tracks. And the track that they presented wasn't similar to that. The only difference that they had in there is that they wanted to consciously build a couple of high speed cornering sections. So they had that in some areas, but they also had cambered features to them. So it was a very typical track, but the lap times were quite low compared to, say, some other world championships. You know, Huddy Arena, we were doing 40-second mids to 50-second highs. And this track, you know, the guys in four mod were doing 16 highs.
So a lot of
laps very quick.
There looks like there's a little bit more space to play with. Is there an intent for September to try and squeeze a bit more lap length into a layout to try and, you know, push that up a little bit, that lap time? Or do you think we'll be sort of still around that area?
I think I was speaking to the team there, they're targeting 18 to 20 second lap times, as 20 seconds as their preferred. What it does do, if they're looking at the space that they have available, it limits their options of how many cut-throughs and changes that they can make. So there will be a fair amount of negative space there that they need to be able to change the track. But it's not going to be a, you know, five corner, two jump track. It will still be a full length track. So I think the main thing, speaking to the European guys that came over, that I never really acknowledged, was the US style tracks. They have jumps through corners as well. So say like this track had a triple double with a dog leg in between. And the driving style required for those types of jumps becomes really evident when you see the US guys there, almost 1/8 scale style, will go over a jump and have to almost whip the car 90 degrees to land to be able to make the next one. So but a lot of the drivers going over there from pretty much everywhere around the world that haven't done a lot of 8-scale racing, that's the biggest difference that a layout would present. compared to, say, like a traditional style 1/10 track here or in Europe, where it's more sweeping high speed corners with a couple of 180s and very straight jumps. That's the biggest difference that the European guys over there struggle with, and personally as well, that we struggle with.
So we might see some people doing some practice on 8-scale sort of tracks wherever they can get to them, or looking for the opportunity to do some of that aerial work. Certainly seemed like that kind of triple-double combo right in front of the driver's stand made quite a difference throughout some of the racing on the weekend, and even right into the last A-final where we saw Brock Champlin make a mistake on the last lap, second last lap in that section of the track. That and the stutter bump section seemed pretty tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I got the opportunity to watch every A-final and B-final there from, the world's best. We had, I think within the facility, I think we had a combined 10 world championships in there as far as drivers goes. And not one driver had a flawless run where they did not bobble or make a mistake on those two sections. That was the most challenging area. And it was really eye-opening to see that you see these guys where they are world champions, they are paid to do this, and they struggle with those sections. And you go, okay, let's go a little bit easier on ourselves.
It's all right if we make some concessions.
And that was that really made for some amazing racing, and some really tight racing, and required a lot from the drivers, both mentally but also from their setups of their cars, to be able to consistently get through those areas without having to clench up every time you hit the jump face.
I've got to say, at club racing level, I'm not a fan of really difficult features. But at a world championship, I'm quite excited about, whether if the team can bring some parts of the track like that really push the very best guys in the world, and don't just kind of give them an easy time. I think that's, as you say, it's going to make for some pretty exciting racing come September.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, if you look at that, at the track that they presented in its rawest form, that jump section that we just spoke about in front of the driver's stand, in reality, for the club racer, that's a double, single, double. And then for the intermediate, it's a triple tabletop transfer. And then for, the top 1% of the world, it's a triple with a whip in the air into a scrub double into a 180 off camber landing on the apex.
I don't even understand what you just said, Andrew.
And that's the thing. You look at it and you go, wow, that looks hard. But that jump section in itself, in its rawest form, is actually quite easy. It's the elite that can do things on those areas that you go, wow, that's just, you're on a whole nother universe and planet to be able to do that.
So just before we go and talk about some of those elite, some of the people that were there and what we've seen from them, let's the other big talking point, I guess, around this event feels like it's a tire situation. So just talk to me a little bit about the tires, how they worked. It's an AKA slick. How did it kind of go across the weekend? What did you see? What was the kind of vibe among those who were there in terms of dealing with the track and that tire?
Yeah, so I think a little bit of backstory to US style racing for some of the listeners that may not know is that over in the US, tread racing, e.g. running on a tire that has any form of tread, now indoors is not a thing. Okay. They race purely on slick tires, or they do the unspeakable thing that makes me cry every time and get a pair of treads and sand them down until they're slicked. And, you just it breaks my heart when you see that. But their routine over there for most indoor tracks, I shouldn't say all, I'm generalizing, but most indoor tracks is slick tires, front and rear. And a typical preparation is to use tire source. So something like a TDK or a Baja or a Sticky Kicks or one of those types of treatments to generate grip. So that's how they race over there in the US. So that's the reason that they went with a slick tire for the Worlds. I think it's the first time in off-road that they've selected a slick tire. So that kind of produces a set of you know, different challenges for drivers, because in the past you would be able to look at your tread and go, is it worn, is it not? If no, happy days, keep using it. If you know, if it is worn, well, then we put a new pair on. The difference here is that you've got a slick that it barely ever looks worn. It just has different stages of softness as you wear through the tire. So it was a completely different mindset and preparation and how you go about managing your tires. The tire they went with is an AKA slick, and it was a conscious decision, and it was voted on by the blocks around the world. So, you know, Raw, FAMA, et cetera, on whether to use source or not. And it was decided not to. Personally, I think that's a really good option that they've gone with, because that preparation is a black art. It is, pardon the pun, but it is that secret sauce to, you know, anywhere from 0.5 to 1.5 seconds a lap.
Yeah.
And it really sorts out the wheat from the chaff. So basically it removes any of that controversy or, you know, potential issues that they might have.
Yeah.
They did float maybe a controlled source, but even then it just creates too much complication. So the tire went quite well. All of the modified division were running it as a part of the event. And grip was quite good compared to, say, that tire when it's been sourced. You know, sure, it's about half a second a lap slower. But consistency was quite good. Break-in wasn't really required. They were quick out of the packet. And, you know, without trying to generalize and to scare people into buying tires, you know, most of the pros will be using a new pair every run or every second run. They did have a drop-off in time of about 0.2 to 0.3 of a second after their second run. But the main change was consistency, the feel of the tire and how it made the car quite edgy, really fell off a cliff after that second run. So the tire was good, albeit I have a feeling that at the, you know, the top 50 to, you know, 50% of the field, it will be a new tire game, so to speak. But I think they've gone with quite a good option. It works well. The grip generated was good, and consistency was really top notch from that. So the only challenge it presented on the weekend that went by that we won't experience when we're over there for the Worlds is they had other classes running different tires. So typically the tracks over there get bedded in with tires and source, and they, you know, the track surface kind of becomes a mixture of clay compound and source sealed track. This time it didn't. You had some AKA rubber going down, a little bit of source, you know, J Concept Silvers, Proline MCs. So the track consistency wasn't there. But I have a feeling at the Worlds, given it will be one tire, same prep, we'll see it fairly consistent in that regard. The only other thing with the tire that we saw a few people doing was, you know, how long do they run it? Do you run a matched two-wheel drive front tire or not?
Yeah.
And what do you need to do to your insert, e.g., you know, there were some people there gluing them to the rim and things like that. But there was no real kind of controversy there as far as, you know, tire treatment or anything like that. They could only clean with water. It was a long way of saying the tire was good.
That's good. Was there a kind of a pattern established around two-wheel drive front tires? Where was it a bit of a mix of who was running, you know, the matching front tire versus might have been running a J Concepts or a Proline front or something else?
Yeah, I mean, in the you know, top 10, top 20, most that I saw were running the AKA two-wheel drive front, purely from a compound matching perspective. The only thing that I think will be tried between now and the event, and obviously at the event, the AKA two-wheel drive front is quite a narrow front tire.
Okay.
And it it's also got quite a high profile. So compared to the rear tire, it sits up quite a fair way, and that creates some driving inconsistencies and feels. So I think there'll be some looks at whether, you know, there's low profile rims that'll be used for those tires, or potentially if you just use another type of tire on the front to make a wider front tire, you know, maybe a J Concept smoothie on the front or something like that. So I think there will be some people out there that'll be brave and try something. And, you know, we were talking about it at the event, that, you know, something very similar happened at the 2013 Worlds in Chico when Jared Thibault came out with a three rib AKA tire on a sugared track. And that was the magic that got him his title there. So we may see something like that happen again.
Just as a blatant bit of self-promotion, Jared was on the show just a couple of months ago and told us that story. So if you want to hear that story from the horse's mouth, then dive back into our back catalogue and have a listen to Jared talking about that exact story with that front tyre at the 2013 Worlds. All right, let's talk about some drivers. I mean, I almost want to talk about kind of, you know, the US drivers and then some of the visitors from overseas. Obviously, Spencer Rivkin, you know, is going to be at the top of our list and took both classes over the weekend. But just talk to me a little bit about, you know, maybe let's start with some of the US drivers that you saw, some that surprised you and who we didn't see. So let's start on the US side with what we saw there in terms of the people who are going to be part of the story in September.
Yeah, I think most of these names that are familiar to everyone over the last three decades of RC, as you mentioned, obviously Spencer Rivkin, current two-wheel drive world champion, two-time world champion. It's his home track, home facility, and he's at his happiest at that venue. So, you know, Spencer just getting the job done on the weekend there. He was pushed by Brock Champlin. In two-wheel drive, that was probably the driver versus driver story of the weekend. Brock was a real standout performer. For him, his speed was honestly quite good. Given that he didn't get the benefit of an extra 2 days practice that most other drivers got, he turned up quite late into the event. So I think as far as, you know, you look at your top tier drivers that did quite well at the event, that will more than likely do well again. You know, your Spencer, your Brock, Aidan Horn did quite well. Obviously, son of Alan Horn, who was so second generation racer. He top qualified two-wheel drive, and did quite well. Just fell off a little bit in the mains. So you've kind of got those the heavy hitters there. One of the big surprise stories of the event was Matthew Gonzalez. One up racer. Who runs a Team Associated as a part of the one up. Driver deal that he's got. Quite honestly, that was a breakout event for him. He's always been there or thereabouts. He always had the title of Captain Stock, master. He won everything under the sun in stock racing and has really struggled for the last 12 months in that transition to modified. And it seemed like at this event everything really clicked for him, and he missed out on a TQ round in two-wheel drive by half of a second, I think, in round three. He had a second, a third, and a sixth in qualifying. Really, really good breakout event for Matt Gonzalez.
And I think for those who might not know too much about Matt or want to hear a little bit more of his story, I did see an episode come out yesterday of the No Name RC podcast, and in which Matt was talking about the weekend. So you want to go and find Lefty and Matt dissecting the event in their normal style, but Matt talks a little bit about his own kind of journey and his own story. The other thing, just before you continue, Andrew, was just to say a couple of things about, you know, from my perspective about Rivkin and Champlin. Spencer, he's putting together a hell of a season, right? Like, I know we're saying this is his home track, but he's been on fire, like, pretty much everywhere he's gone this last 6 months or so. And so, you know, we might want to say, hey, home track advantage, but he would be in the conversation anyway, based on what he's doing in every category at every racetrack he goes to. They're at the US Nationals this weekend. It would not be a surprise to see him win that event. So that's, you know, he's got to be in the conversation anyway. And Champlin, I think that's a really interesting story to me, for a guy whose historically strength has been on carpet and turf, you know, but has really emerged on dirt in the last 6 to 12 months. So very much in the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I echo your comments there about Spencer. I mean, you know, he is the Tour Drive world champion. He went over to Putty Arena and got the job done over there. Yeah. He also got the job done in Yatabe on Astro, where Team Associated never run at world championship level before. So, you know, it is his home track, but I think that just makes him even stronger. He would get the job done in, you know, if we were racing on the moon.
What about Ryan Mayfield? Tell me a little bit about Mayfield. We saw him, you know, this year he's driving for Tecno in 8-scale, not a contracted 10-scale driver, but put in an appearance on the weekend, and I think we're expecting him at the Worlds. What did you see, and what's your kind of vibe on Ryan's, the shape he's in coming into this event?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it briefly there. Obviously, he's running for Tecno. He's, you know, 1/10 scale for him is a side gig. He's, you know, not a paid 1/10 racer. He's, you know, all in on 1/8, and obviously he had his eyes on the prize of, you know, this was just a fun weekend, and this weekend's, you know, where the bills get paid, at the 1/8 Royal Nationals. So it was interesting to see Ryan turn up, and you know, he's been flip flopping with different chassis in his 1/10 program to run. Obviously, previously was running Yokomo. And departed from them, and had been running Team Associated Dual Drive and Full Drive at an event previous to this one. He also tried out the Lossy the TLR Full Drive.
Okay. Yeah.
So we, you know, most of us that weren't on the inner circle didn't know what he was going to turn up with, but ended up turning up with Team Associated vehicles in two-wheel and four-wheel. And then slowly through the event, honestly, had to remember how to drive 1/10 the last time.
That's right.
He'd only driven 1/10, I think, a couple of times since I think Desert Classic, which was earlier in the year. So he, you know, given the amount of time that he put in behind the wheel in 1/10, and, you know, the week before he was in California doing 1/8 testing, and where his mindset was at, he turned up, put his cars down on track, put it in the main in full drive. I think he qualified 6th, had some struggles through there. We had to work on his setup a little bit to get the car comfortable for him, and what he needed to get out of the car. And to a drive, I think he had a bit of a struggle, and I think he qualified somewhere in the mid to lower the B. But towards the end there, after racing, you know, we did some post-race testing and got him comfortable and on pace. So I think, you know, the story with Mayfield is that although he's not racing 1/10, you know, both myself and Brent Tulkey were talking about it at the event while watching him drive, that if Ryan believes that he can do it and he puts in maybe a week or two's effort, you can't write him off. He will be right up there. So I think, you know, he hasn't really been in the conversation a lot recently when people talk about Worlds. You know, it's always been about Rivkin and Fend and Champlin. You know, Mayfield's a two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive world champion. And, you know, if he puts in the effort, he'll be a contender to take the thing down.
Good. Oh, I'm even more excited about September now. only halfway through the conversation. Yeah, it really is a question, isn't it? Of, you know, and having had on this show some really interesting conversations of late, not least with David Spashett last week, about the kind of effort that goes into preparing for a world championship. The Jared Tebow conversation was another. That's really the question, isn't it? For a lot of these guys that split their time between 10th and 8th scale, of how much time, how much focus can go into actually preparing for this world's event. So that would be the story for Mayfield. I think you mentioned Chase. Oh, yeah, sorry, go on.
And you know, I think there's, you know, one thing to mention there as well is that, like any other high performing sport and athletes at that level, they all have the ability and they all have the talent to do it and to win. And the difference between the person who wins on the weekend and the person who potentially doesn't even make the A is self-belief and that confidence that they can do it. And then suddenly that then creates drive. They then start practicing and focus and all of that. So I think, you know, if Mayfield on the weekend says, "Hey, I can do this. I'm going to win this thing." You know, at that level, sometimes that's just enough to get the job done.
Yeah. All right. Let's just keeping an eye on the time here. Let's turn our attention to some of the overseas drivers who were there for the warm up on the weekend. You know, obviously a crew from Europe, a couple from Australia, one or two from Japan. So tell me a little bit about some of the internationals that you saw who are still really, it seems, I guess from the outside, it looks like they're sort of still behind the eight ball in terms of finding their way around this kind of racetrack. But what did you see from some of those internationals?
Yeah, it's the first Worlds warm-up that I've been to. But, you know, noting that the amount of international talent that attended the event, especially for an event that's, you know, in the US, was quite astounding. If you told me that was the World Championships, I'd go, that's actually a pretty strong
Sounds
field.
Right.
You know, you could probably count maybe 10 drivers at the elite top 20 level, 30 level that weren't there. You know, talking about the European contingent that came over, from say, you know, I'll embellish your Schumacher, love for Schumacher. They sent their entire team, minus, you know, honestly, Lee Martin. Yep. He was entered for the event, but they made the conscious decision to give some of their other drivers the opportunity, to get familiar with what racing presents in the US. Instead of Lee Martin going, they sent, I think Luke Holdsworth was his name. Really awesome young man to meet and discuss, you know, the challenges that he was having compared to the racing that they have on their outdoor Astro versus indoor slick clay. But going back to, you know, the contingent that came over, you know, the Schumacher team sent most of their heavy hitters, you know, notably, you know, Champlin, who was there. But from Europe, they had Orlowski, who's, you know, has to be in the conversation for one of the best drivers of all time, you know, across all of the codes of racing. You know, he's an absolute talent. Yeah. So he was there along with a bunch of others from that team. Schumacher also sent their their lead engineer and designer along with a few other people there. So they kind of went with their everything and the kitchen sink to have a crack at learning as much as they can in an event. And the parallel can be, you know, the same for X-Ray. They sent everyone. So Bruno Coelho was there, along with Martin Bayer and a bunch of their other drivers to kind of, you know, get there, understand the track, understand what's required of the cars, and then obviously to go back home and throw that engineering brain to seeing if they can improve and come back with something that's gonna do well on the world stage. So the European drivers that's what made the event feel very international. And there were guys there that at the top level you don't really see race with each other a lot, and so that created some really, really cool racing on track. And different styles and approaches to jumps and how they handled the cars was quite cool to see. Obviously Koki Kato from Japan came over along with one of his mechanics was there as well. And then a bunch from the UK and obviously Canada, Ty Tessman was there. And us too from Australia, myself and Jared Mann. So the international flavour was strong, and the two big teams that turned up, I should mention as well, obviously S-Works turned up as well with Jon Neumann, who shouldn't be discounted. It was a proper hit out for the European guys who were there. They all did struggle initially, besides honestly Orlowski. When he turned up, he was the pace setter. He was the guy on track. The Hobby Action had a club meeting on the Wednesday before the event, and he was half a second a lap quicker than anyone, and really set the pace. And quite honestly, was making everyone panic around, oh, if he's that quick out of the gate, how much faster are they going to get? And most teams were there trying to find a half a second to a second on track. And then as the event went through, most of the European teams kind of tapered off, and then the cream rose to the top, and the strength that's associated kind of took charge there, and the other teams kind of fell off through the event. So it might be some of the learned experience from US racers and what happens to the track and what you need to do to your cars to make them work through an event. I think that's where we saw kind of like a fall off and a plateau from those Euro guys that really did come.
Yeah, for me, that was one of the really interesting parts of the weekend was, I guess, Orlowski in particular. I was expecting, him having already been over there earlier in the year to be a little more present at the front of the field than we saw, certainly in the mains. And so that, that's an interesting insight into, perhaps it was about the way the track developed, and that, as you said, where they began things in open practice before the weekend proper got underway, pretty strong, kind of dropped away a little bit over the course of the weekend. Obviously, Champlin's not in that situation, but yeah.
Yeah, they use a fairly, I shouldn't say it's a similar playbook, but there's all those little things that's going to happen to the track that you may or may not see that these guys are doing on their cars or their driving style, and then I just think that's how we would back home here. We know when you start on a wet track and it's going to be loose, you need soft compounds and pin tires, and then you change the setup and the tire to as the track evolves. It is, even though you don't see it on the video, it does change throughout the day. So I think it's just developing that playbook for those guys and what they need to do as the event goes on.
And it certainly sounds like a number of the international drivers stuck around for some continued practice on into the week after the event itself. So there's probably been a bunch of learning already done.
They definitely did
record this,
So the X-Ray team stayed for a day or two, I believe. Similar for the Schumacher team and the S-Works teams. All of the associated guys had to leave and start getting ready for the Fuel National. So there was only a half day of post-event testing there on the Sunday, where everyone was just doing laps. I have every expectation that all of those teams are going to go home and come back a lot stronger. I was saying to a lot of people, and it's quite evident, it's happened in the past, that usually it's not good luck to win the world's warm-up because, you sit a bit more comfortable and you don't go off and you throw everything at it and, the engineering power and creative thinking that forces you to think outside the square. I think that's what will happen for a lot of these teams, and I fully expect they'll come back with some really special stuff and make everyone work to even get into the top 30, let alone the A main and eventually win.
I think that's a really good observation, Andrew, and a reminder to us that this is a warm-up event, and that teams would have been coming to this event with very different approaches to what they wanted to kind of get out of the weekend, and actually winning the race potentially not so important or not anywhere near as important as working through a program to kind of doing the research and finding the things they needed to find. So it's a good reminder. Absolutely. This is a warm-up, not the world itself.
It's all data collection at the end of the day, and all of those testing notes and you know what's required out of the cars, then that goes off and you come back and you kind of implement that during the season and then rock up, you know, potentially with some different ideas, different parts, different cars, and off you go. You know, I mean, if you look at the previous world championships in Slovakia, Spencer Rivkin and Dustin Evans went over there for the warm-up. And I think Spencer was like 15 or 20 seconds behind in the A main from the winner. You know, fast forward 4 months, he wins the event.
There you are.
So that's the whole purpose of the warm-up, is not to win and dominate. It's to understand where you sit and to understand what's required.
So let's just kind of do a little whip through of, we've talked drivers, but just give me a little bit of your assessment of manufacturers with that in mind of, you know, where are the different teams at, and, you know, what do you see based on what you saw on the weekend? You know, what's the kind of the pathway between now and September? So if we start with Team Associated, that, you know, clearly know the conditions very well and have cars that are designed for racing in those conditions. And the weekend went well, but tell me a little bit about where you think, you know, obviously you have some insights into that team. Where are things at for you guys, and what's the focus for the next kind of couple of months?
Yeah, I think, you know, results, you know, results aside and you know, my own personal bias put aside, you know, it wasn't smooth sailing for the team all the way through. There were some obvious setup challenges that you know, we were noticing that other cars were doing better. And you know, it's like that with any form of racing. There's sections where you can improve and sections where you're the benchmark. But I think the general theme for the Associated team was, how do we generate steering and not let the rear end break loose, and be able to get in and out of the corner very quickly, where some of the other teams were excelling at that, but obviously, you know, sometimes didn't have the rear grip or didn't have the balance. That were the general themes of the team. This, you know, on the previous weekend, there was a lot of testing going on. I don't think any driver was running the same setup as each other. The setups varied quite a lot between each driver. And the interesting thing was, with the tires and not being able to apply any treatment or source, you're not obviously generating the maximum amount of grip. So there were a lot of changes done to the car with not a lot of result because you couldn't work the chassis hard enough. So I think the general themes, not just for Associated, but all teams, were, how do you generate mechanical traction? And the, you know, the general theme for that was softening off the cars, making them quite, you know, suspension wise soft, and then, you know, supporting them, you know, supporting those shocks by, you know, running high roll centers. So the car, you know, the tire and the chassis supported. So, that was the theme for Associated, is how do you generate mechanical grip, where the tire, you know, can't offer you anymore. That was a theme there. And, you know, through the event, we got a lot faster and started to understand what was required of the track. And quite honestly, that was from watching the other manufacturers out there and how their cars were working, versus where we were. That's kind of Associated. They've done quite well out of it. And I know, there's, you know, we'll have a couple of debrief meetings afterwards. You know, I'll be doing some analysis of the footage and lap times and sector analysis and all of that. And there's some key themes that will go away from that event and say, okay, this is what we need to work on. Like everyone else, right? But yeah, I think, you know, Associated's cars and drivers were working the best out there as far as being able to generate a result. But I think that there were some other manufacturers out there that were have a better base speed and chassis stability than AE.
Interesting. Yeah. So the results don't tell the whole story, particularly at a warm up. Tell me about Schumacher. It's a, I mean, I, you know, if you listen to the show, you know, I have a historical connection with Schumacher, and I've been really interested to see them kind of over the last 12 to 18 months really emerge and say, you know, we want to be a big player in, you know, at a world level, not just in the UK and in Europe. And so we saw a big team. You talked about them throwing everything and the kitchen sink. What did you see from them? You know, where do you see the next couple of months focus for that team?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great question. The it was quite evident seeing, you know, having the opportunity to be over there last year and see Champlin with the Schumacher then, and then obviously since the, you know, they've signed Ryan Cavalieri, and how they go about their business and how their cars work, you know, in honestly a condition that they're not really the base of the chassis not really wasn't designed for.
Yeah.
It's designed for European racing, right? And one of the things that became quite evident, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, Orlowski was the pace setter. You know, when we first got there, was their equipment on that surface is now looking like it's, you know, sounds strange, but designed for it. Compared to what they were having to run last year, I know a lot of people tried to drive Brock's car last year, and they said, "Well, we don't know how you drive that thing." And now you look at them on the track, and you know you have those kind of three heavy hitters there. Quite honestly, making them look like they're meant to be there.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I don't know what they were doing setup wise and all of that. But the cars looked really good on track. The design methodology, you know, or, you know, kind of ethos for Schumacher, you know, you could see there, they've got some special, you know, driveline parts, and in their four drive, they don't run a center diff. They run a different, different type of configuration. But all of that aside, it worked on that surface. They probably had the best steering and, you know, being able to get in and out of the corner out of any manufacturer there. I believe all they were lacking was a little bit of consistency and rear grip from their car. But it, you know, when the teams were there and saw how quick both Brock and Orlowski were going in practice, it made a lot of people go, oh, we have to look at how they're going about their business and where we're losing lap time. And it was all in the entry and mid corner. So I think they've got a package that has the potential to outperform a lot of people.
X-Ray, another big team that were there on the weekend, looked from the outside, two drive looked like Struggle Street a little bit, and four drive, I think, with the exception of Chase Lemieux, who did look strong. Some of the other guys struggling a little bit, or with a bigger learning curve to kind of follow. But you were there in the building. What's your observations of where X-Ray find themselves?
Yeah, I mean, X-Ray, obviously they've got their current four drive world champion. You know, Quello was there, Tessman, Tom Redenek, Chase Lemieux. You know, they had a lot of their heavy hitters there. You know, Martin Bayer went over, who's, you know, obviously the kind of key designer and engineer for that team, for that program. And it was quite interesting. You know, speaking to you earlier before we started the podcast, you know, drawing parallels of how their equipment performs, say, here in Australia, versus over there in the US, that it almost felt like they were on, you know, they were behind the eight ball the entire time. Their equipment was either, you know, not generating enough traction, or was, you know, traction rolling in areas that were quite strange. I think a lot of their design and all of that for their dirt cars comes from obviously developing at Huddy Arena, which is quite a slick, slippery surface. So
yeah.
I think that's why, you know, say in outdoor off-road conditions, they're one of the benchmarks. But when they turned up at the event, it was quite evident that they were struggling. Tom Redenek, obviously, you know, he's a staple racer there in the SoCal and, you know, just in the American scene, and you know, can't be discounted from putting it in the top three at the Worlds as well. He was struggling quite a lot, but is saying that they were having to throw everything at those cars to get them to work. Notably, you know, Bruno Coelho turned up, did I think about two or three runs, and then left the track and basically had to go back to the hotel and almost build two new cars because the setups that they came here with that they thought were going to work didn't. And they had to throw a fair amount of brain power behind those to get them to work. Come the end of qualifying in mains, you know, I think Bruno he just missed out on TQ in full drive in round three.
Yep.
So he was, you know, they had their stuff working pretty well.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of noise of Dremels and cutting and all of that stuff to get them where they needed to be. So it was an interesting parallel to draw where, you know, you'd think of, you know, at least us here in Australia, you know, we know that all of that kit works, but over there they had to work pretty hard. But I fully expect they'll come back and, you know, be right up there anyway.
Well, it does sound
Chase Lemieux did the best out of that team. Honestly, he was a standout performer, absolutely standout.
Does sound like that's a team, X-Ray, that have made the most of this warm-up in terms of, you know, who really have gone to school at the event and done a lot of work. And I've certainly seen some socials around in the last couple of days about the further steps they made on Monday and Tuesday in terms of coming to grips with the track. So I think you're right in that kind of assessment of it'll be a different X-Ray in September than perhaps we saw over the weekend. Couple of smaller teams that were there, not a big presence from TLR. Dakota Fend obviously not there as the kind of standout for that team. Brennan Schimmel putting a car in the two-wheel drive A final. We're not going to write Fend off, and you know he would be up there in the top line of favoritism alongside Rivkin, I would think. But from what you saw of the TLR guys, how are things looking for them?
Yeah, it's very hard to say without Dakota Fenn there, but I don't think you would need to see him at the event to know how he's going to go.
Yeah.
I think they had the TLR team had Brennan Schimmel there for the event. He's you know, just recently made the move up from stock to modified over there in the US. So he did quite well. Mm. I think he made the main in full drive. You know, and he's from he's from Florida and does a lot of carpet racing. So for him to, you know, recently make the move to mod and to just run on carpet and then put it in the main there, you know, obviously that you can't deny that their equipment has the potential to put it right up there. They also had Thomas Tran there, who's the you know, international global team manager for TLR.
Okay.
And just to obviously put some thought behind what they need to do as a team to turn up at the Worlds, but you know, honestly, didn't get the opportunity to have a look at how they were performing on track as far as did their car look balanced and all of that. But you know, in all honesty, it could have looked unbalanced, but you know, Fenn's going to turn up and he's still one of the favourites regardless. So it was unfortunate not to see him there. But I know their focus is on the nationals this week. So, TLR were there, but no, didn't really, get the opportunity to have a red hot crack at it.
Yeah. And S-Works would be the other one who had a couple of drivers there. And we've already mentioned, Misha Widmeyer and Jorn Neumann, I think in the B finals, but presumably, you know, again, a learning developmental experience rather than an out and out pace kind of exercise for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, for those guys to put it in the B final at that race, you know, there were people in the B main, like, I don't know, Ryan Cavalieri, Ryan Mayfield.
Yeah.
In some of the races. So the one thing that's evident with the professional races is they could drive most cars and be there or thereabouts. their equipment was working quite well. I remember I reported a tour drive run of Yawn, and his equipment looked quite good. You know, they seem to have things working okay. Unfortunately, between the Schumacher team and the S-Works team, they were during practice all running all white bodies, so I couldn't tell if it was an S-Works or a Schumacher. You know, I could tell it was an X-ray by the sound of the, you know, the sound of the car. Yeah. But yeah, it was quite tough out there to see who was who. But no, I mean, like there wasn't one car out there from any manufacturer that was doing donuts and clearly off the pace.
No.
Everyone was there or thereabouts.
That's not going to be the story at that level, is it? It's quality drivers in. I actually think S-Works is one of the interesting stories, the emergence of S-Works as a manufacturer over the last couple of years, in 8-scale in particular, but also in 10-scale.
Definitely.
A new manufacturer on the rise.
Yeah. I mean, and they're putting in the time in both codes and doing quite well. Mm. I think I don't know who will turn up for the Worlds for their team, but they're definitely a contender they look like their program's going quite strong. At the end of the day, there will be a mix of who's in and who's not in that top 10 that everyone's going to keep their eye on. But I think the teams that do make it in there will be the teams that can understand the tire and understand what they need to do to their car to make it comfortable to drive for 5 minutes. If you look at the racing over the event, there wasn't a 5 minute run where everyone in that A main didn't crash, and so that was the undertone across all of the teams of how do we get these cars comfortable to drive, where they steer, they have rear grip, but also you're not having to use 100% of your brain power to get around the track. I think the manufacturer that cracks that code of both fast and comfortable, will have that secret sauce to get the job done.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. Just tell me, we'll wrap up in a moment, but just give me a few thoughts on some of the people who weren't there. Ongaro maybe is one of the standouts there, but some of the European guys or a couple of Japanese guys. There are still some pretty big names to come into the mix, aren't there, as we gather in September.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, say, who you would expect to be in the top 30, you've got the guys from Europe. So obviously Lee Martin, you've got the Hall brothers. So Tommy and Jamie. Jamie just recently came off his first, national championship victory. So both him and his brother will be right up there. You've got guys like David Ongaro. World champion Neil Craig, who somehow puts it in the main every time he turns up. So you know, guys like him, and Davide Ongaro, he almost won Tour Drive in at the last Worlds. So he'll turn up. You've got guys like Yuna Hattonen as well.
Yeah.
And Marcus Karup, who will honestly throw their hat in the ring, and throw down with the best of them. So you've got some really astounding talent from Europe that's still to come. Along with, there's always, I was talking to this at some of the guys at the event, there's always one or two people that aren't on the radar that put it in the top 20 that, we don't really talk about because we're not in the racing scene over there. So I fully expect that we'll have some other people turn up. I think, guys like, I think his name's Ben Smith, races for, he'll be there as well. And then if you look at Japan, Koki Kato was there. I don't know if Yusuke is going to attend the Worlds this time, but I'd need to see if he's entered. I think he was still doing a university and all of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, we've also got Reedy Race winner Chris Sturdy, who's going to go over there from Australia. I'll be a little bit patriotic here and say that that Chris has the ability to, you know, put it in the main as well. So I think we shouldn't glaze over that, along with a whole bunch of other fast guys that we're sending over, like Jordan Isurgeon, Lachlan Donnelly, Lachlan Monday, you know, all of that crew, plus the old guard going over there to throw down and have a bit of fun, you know, Ari Barkley, Ray Monday, you know.
Legends, all of them. Actually, on the mention of Chris Doty, I will do a little forward promo and say that Chris is on the show next week. We actually recorded last night, and we did really dig into his preparation for the Worlds coming up and the mindset that he's going there with. So, yeah, that's a really interesting chat to look forward to. We'll have that out in the next week or so for people to have a listen to. And Chris has been there and thereabouts at Reedy Races and Worlds in the past. So, yeah, definitely one to
watch. Well, I mean, he won two races at the Reedy Racer Champions in the Invitational class.
Yeah.
He's had a fourth and a tenth for a round at a World Championships in Tour Drive. You know, he can't be discounted from that that group of top 20, top 30 drivers. So I'm really excited to see the guys that weren't there from Europe, from all around the world, but quite selfishly, the guys from here and see how they throw down.
We might have to see if we can get a few of the Australian team together for a chat later on in the year as things get a little bit closer. Andrew, it's time to let you go, but I can't let you go without saying, you know, having been there for the week, seen what you've seen, analysed what you've analysed, I'm not going to ask you to name the winner, but I am going to kind of ask you to sort of just give me three names, two kind of front-running favourites and a left-field pick, a left-field one to watch based on what you've seen and what you know so far. Who are the two that are going to fight it out, and who's your kind of roughy, your one from that might come from the clouds?
Spencer Rivkin and Brock Champlin will be they'll be the guys battling out in my mind.
Yep.
You know, to be honest, that could be Fendt as well.
Yeah.
But Mayfield, I can't comment because he wasn't there. Right. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I can say that, you know, those are going to be the guys that throw down. I am really, really excited to see how Marcus Carrick goes. I think he's the dark horse, the smoky, the person that could throw the cat amongst the pigeons.
Wildly fast, isn't it? Incredibly quick. So the question about the track conditions will be the question to be answered for him. But yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that could be any. That's a one name out of a handful of 20 that could put it on the podium, right? But I'm super excited to see how Marcus can go. I should say Davide Ongaro, but you know, he'll turn up, and no doubt will probably surprise us all and win forward, right?
He probably will.
Yeah.
Andrew Salvaggi, thank you so much for taking some time on this Friday afternoon to have a chat and to relive that week and give us a whole lot of insight into what's going on with the track and the venue, the tyres, the manufacturers and the drivers. And if it's possible, I'm even more looking forward to September now. But thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, Scott, thank you again. It's a privilege to be asked to come on your show for a second time. I just want to give you a shout out and say thank you to all your listeners. And, you know, while I was over there in the US, there were people that were saying that, oh, hey, do you guys listen to that guy with the smooth dulcet tones over there in Australia that does the podcast? And I said, Scott Guy, I do listen to him. So you've got some notoriety around the world, mate, and keep doing what you're doing. It's been really good to listen to every one of your episodes. I refresh my Spotify every Wednesday to see if there's a new episode dropped. So thank you for the opportunity, and keep doing what you're doing. I do apologize to the listeners if any of my comments have been vague. I'm purposely doing that, knowing that anything I say goes out in the ether. I need to keep things a little bit tight-lipped. Apologies again, and if anyone wants to have a chat or understand anything about the event, the venue, the the accommodation, the all of that type of stuff, please reach out to myself, and more than happy to answer any questions anyone around the world has.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. We are having a really good time on the show, and there's some really good stuff coming up. I mentioned Chris Dirty, so he's on the show next week. Definitely a good chat worth listening to. And there's some other bits and pieces that we're just working on that are quite exciting from my point of view. So that'll kind of unfold as the year goes on. But now, though, that's it for today. This has been a unusual double episode week. We've had this show come out and, of course, the David Spashett Show. If you've not listened to that, let me encourage you to kind of go hit one of the most thoughtful, interesting, insightful kind of racers going around and a five-time world champion to boot. So go and track that episode down and have a listen. That's it for today. We'll be back next week.